Hey, it's Elle.
And M.
And you're listening to the Baby Project Podcast.
In this podcast, we will discuss our journeys as well as other warriors going through the ups and downs of infertility.
There's ups?
Yes, there's ups.
Okay. As a reminder, be kind to yourself and skip as needed. We know some topics may be triggering. Let's get talking.
This is episode 20.
Fall down 4 times, get up 5. Today we have Jenny with us, who is one of the authors from Where's Helen? Jenny is an elementary school teacher currently teaching grade 2 and can be found spending time with her Italian family. She likes to do yoga, read, and journal. Welcome, Jenny, to the Baby Project podcast. So we just actually last week spoke to Leah, and Leah says she also likes yoga. So I'm curious to know, have you guys ever yoga together?
You know what? Leah and I have not yoga together because I'm like the beginner stage of yoga and Leah is like expert. So I feel like I need more practice before I can actually yoga with Leah, but I would love to.
So what about, Jenny, your love story? How did you and your husband meet and come to be?
Mm-hmm. Oh, you know what? Our love story is very, 2020s. We met on Plenty of Fish. We are a success story from Plenty of Fish.
Yes.
Mm-hmm. So my husband and I have been together for 7 years, and we've been married for 5. And we both actually met later in life. So I'd say we both kind of came out of like long relationships in our 20s and we actually met in our 30s. Mm-hmm. And to me, I'll be honest, on our first date, it was very like, okay, what's wrong with you? Because like you seem like really good and the people I've been meeting on here have not quite been like this. And I think he felt the same way. Like, okay, like, yeah, she's, you know, her picture matches what she sees. She's really nice. And so we kind of hit it off on day one. And yeah, it's kind of history after that. It's just been a really, really beautiful union. I've never felt more cherished with my
partner.
That's wonderful. Did you guys have like that love at first sight? Like, did you go home after like, oh my God,
he's the one?
I definitely was like, okay, damn, all right, your picture matches you in person, that's great. And he was a gentleman from the beginning, like opened up my door, we met halfway, obviously, right? Like, and I came from an Italian family, my mother found out like where he lived, did it like a police check on him because I was meeting him online. So all safe. But anyways, yeah, we had a really good first date at a bar, just grabbed a couple drinks together. And what I loved about it was just the flow of conversation. Mm-hmm. Because you don't always get that on a first date. So that was really like unique to me. I definitely thought he was attractive and I loved his personality and he has the most beautiful blue eyes. So I fell for that quite quickly. Mm-hmm. And I think after a couple of dates, I just knew like, damn, like this is real. Like this could be good. Mm-hmm. So yeah.
Where sometimes where you're like pinching yourself, like it's too good. This is too good.
Like, you know, everyone knows that when you meet online, you kind of got to go through like your crazy stories first. Mm-hmm. So it was really nice that like, oh, he's like a breath of fresh air, you know?
Yeah.
It was really, really sweet. And I remember going home that night and like telling my mom, like, I'm really excited about this one. So,
But, so while you were talking online, was it too early or what, at what point did you guys start talking about family planning and like what your family's going to look like?
I'll be honest, probably at the very beginning, like we were talking a little bit online and it moved quickly into like texting and then to like conversations over the phone. Mm-hmm. So, and because I'm like, I come from a big Italian and Ukrainian family background. I'm a big family person. So I know that that was one of like the very first questions I talked to him about. And he definitely wanted kids and we're both on the same page to like, hopefully have a marriage in the future and kind of start right away. Like most couples do, like wait a few years, enjoy each other and, start as soon as possible.
Did you find that it was something that was a little bit more like for yourself? Or maybe even for him too, because you had said that you guys met later on, right? Where you weren't in your early 20s, where you know, we're thinking about career and friends and having a good time. And, you know, some are not really thinking about family planning yet.
Right.
Like something in the future, but was it something that was like, you guys were both on the same page and like, yeah, we want to kind of start right away?
I'll say this, because when you meet in your 30s, you kind of know more of who you are. You've kind of achieved like those career and school goals that you want to achieve. Absolutely. So that's why I think things like moved along quicker. Like we were engaged after 2 years. Mm-hmm. So things did move quick. I'd say for him, like he always knew he wanted to be a dad and have a family. But for me, it was like, okay, like I'm turning 32, like when we were engaged, because then I'm like, oh my God, okay, like we'll get married like 1 year, maybe less than a year. Like on my honeymoon, I was thinking about having kids. Typical woman.
Yeah, absolutely right. Once that biological clock starts ticking, you can't silence it.
Right.
It's there.
Can't snooze it.
Yeah, absolutely. So do you want to, you know, let us into your world a little bit about what has been going on with your fertility journey, what it's been like and where you are now?
So, yeah, that's a very, you know, big question, and I will do my absolute best to talk about it without crying, but of course that might happen.
It's okay. So, one of us cries usually each episode, so don't even worry.
Yeah, every episode for me seems like.
So we were, 32 engaged. By the time we were married, it was like 33. So I probably, you know, started to try the second our honeymoon came. So now we're going into like my 34th year, and, you know, I had gotten off the pill. I'll say that I was on the pill for a long time. So I got off the pill and, I thought, okay, like, oh, you know, like the beginning is so great. 'Cause you're like, oh, we won't even think about it. We'll just have lots of sex and everything's going to be great. And I'm sure I'll be pregnant in like no time.
Mm-hmm.
Oh, ignorance is bliss.
Like, I think every, I know to those people that happens, like, good for you, because it's not what happened to me. So after that, like, it was like a year and like, you know, I felt like, okay, like something's kind of up, like this should probably be happening by now. And to be completely honest, at the beginning, I didn't track ovulation. I didn't even know about prenatals. I didn't know about any of those things. I just genuinely thought, okay, like roughly my, you know, your ovulation days, like on day 14, like I knew that, but I didn't know like the timing of it is so important, like the day before, during and after kind of thing. So a couple of friends were like, okay, you just have to like really track it, get these strips, do this, do that, get on prenatals, da, 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 da. So I did that. Nothing. Period came every time. You're like crying in the bathroom because you're like, fuck, I hate you, period. Like before it was like, I want you, period. I want to make sure I'm not pregnant when you're in high school. And now it's like, oh, I hate you. Anyways, so we went to the clinic to get tested because we just thought, okay, what if something's up? I'd rather know than not know. And after multiple tests, it actually came back that we had unexplained infertility. And unexplained infertility is one of the most like craziest mind fucks, because you want to know answers. And you think when you go to a clinic, they're going to provide you with answers. And me being the control freak that I am, I was like excited to go to the clinic. So I was like, great. You're going to tell me what my problem is. I'm going to fix it. We're going to get pregnant. Done.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
But then the doctor says to us, yeah, actually, like your eggs look good. You have a good egg reserve. Your husband's sperm is strong and healthy. And yeah, you have something called unexplained. And I was like, what the hell is unexplained infertility? Like, you guys are the professionals. I don't understand how you're giving me basically something that has no answers to.
Yeah.
So based on that, the doctor said, okay, like I highly recommend an IUI. And an IUI is where they put the semen like right beside your egg. So I tried that. And again, I was hopeful. It was the beginning. I was thinking to myself, okay, so I have unexplained infertility. It happens. And we're going to go this IUI route. And it's also $500 compared to, you know, an IVF that costs about $20,000 by the time everything's said and done.
Mm-hmm.
But after three failed IUIs, I was like, fuck, like so devastated, like crying all the time, hating my body. And from the last IUI, we found out that my husband had triple the amount of sperm. So that was just more vindication for me that, oh, this is my fault. There's something wrong with me. I must be doing something wrong, because he's been told over and over again that his sperm is healthy, strong. And then the guy was like, oh my God, like, we just did your numbers and they're through the roof. And my husband felt great about that.
Yeah. You're a fucking superstar.
Right. Super sperm.
Awesome. He's a superstar and my eggs are shit. Great. Thank you. But they kept saying, but you're fine because you're unexplained. Awesome. So you're giving me no answers and my husband's a rock star. Cool. So then from the IUIs, we had a chance to put our name on a waiting list for the IVF, because Ontario grants you one free IVF under the age of 40. And it just like randomly came up where the doctor said, you know what, we have a quota to do, your name came up, so we have a chance to kind of squeeze you in. Hmm. So again, I'm thinking, and I'm a big religious person too, so I'm thinking, oh, this is a sign. This is why I've been, you know, crying and being devastated over these failed IUIs. Like, you know, we're going to try. This is our like little miracle. Like, oh, IVF. Okay. That's going to work. Like, that's like the best one kind of thing. Mm-hmm. And again, not knowing much about it, I kind of just dived in. I never saw a naturopath. I was doing a little bit of the prenatals, but like I hadn't done any of the research. And I highly recommend for women in my shoes to go and do that research prior, like speak to a naturopath, prepare your body, go to the webinars and like stuff that it kind of informs you, like how you're going to go through this, like emotionally and mentally too, because you just think about the physical part and the financial part. You don't necessarily know what's going to happen to you mentally and emotionally mm-hmm. as you embark on this journey. So again, I just kind of dove in and the first IVF, I remember, I believe it was like 10 eggs that were pulled from that egg retrieval. So again, you're like, awesome, like 10 eggs, like all I need is one, like this is great. And prior to that, they have to put these injections in you that make you feel like your ovaries are about to explode. And I remember like walking like a penguin into egg retrieval day. Because like it feels literally like a chicken, like with hens, like because it's literally making your follicle like give you the most amount, right? So so that process too was just like I was just going with the motions, not really thinking too much about it. And I feel like I really should have done more research at the time. So again, we get these 10 eggs, and then the hardest part that I say to all women is the genetic testing portion. Because now they offer genetic testing and it's $1,000 per egg. So my husband and I thought at the time, okay, like we'll try, you know, a couple eggs and like maybe $3,000 to $5,000 we might have paid at that time. But unfortunately, as we were going through the genetic testing, you get a call every single day, right? For the first 5 days, because you have to have your eggs grow to that blastocyst stage. And for me, that was probably the hardest part of the journey, because you're going to either get your highest high or your lowest low from an embryologist. And yeah. They usually called you, in my case, like before or after school. So like my 9, I think 5 completely didn't even go, like didn't grow to like even day 1. And then on day 3, I think another 3 kind of fell off. And then I was down to 1. And like I said, just not expecting that. And then once I was at 1, I got that tested. So here I am thinking I'm going to be testing all these different embryos. They're going to all make it, but you know, only 1 made it. And it came back abnormal, which means that it would result in a miscarriage. So that was my first IVF experience. And I just remember feeling like, holy shit, like, I just went through all of that, and here I am thinking I'm at the like best of the best, and they can't even help me. Like, what am I going to do now? So that was my first IVF experience. And I just remember like crying in my husband's arms many nights, just being like, what's wrong with me? Why can't I do this? Like, I hate my body. Like, maybe, you know, the eggs I produced weren't good enough. Like, just questioning everything at that point. So we took some time to like travel and like kind of let go, right? Everyone's like, oh, you got to let go, not think about it, all the stupid comments that come your way. And again, not a lot of people knew about that IVF too, but my closest friends that knew kind of were just like, you know, like, it's okay, like, try again. But I was thinking, no, like, IVF is the last resort, like, in my mind. I know that there's other options, but in my mind, I thought that was it. And we traveled, and like I said, I'm in, like, Italy and Greece on this, like, Mediterranean cruise, supposed to be letting go and thinking about all the wonderful things in life. And here I am, like, sneakingly packing my ovulation strips and, like, telling my husband, let's get, you know, drink some vino tonight and have some fun. Like, you know, like, it, the part for me in this whole journey is you never stop as a woman. You never stop thinking about it. It's constantly on your mind, even though you're like, okay, I'm going to let go. I'm going to try and just go with the flow of life. Everyone tells me I'm too much of a control freak. I can't control this. But being pissed every single time. Like, I remember coming back from that trip and being pissed off at this lady. She was like, so when are you two having kids? And da da da. And it's like, listen, lady, if you only knew what I just went through, yeah, like, shut up. Anyways, so I took some time, to heal from all of that. And I felt like, okay, you have two choices. You're going to be miserable or you're going to do something about it. So I went to therapy. I did the work to try to make myself feel good about myself again, because also hearing that my husband's sperm was so good, I was like, you know, feeling not woman enough. Like, what if I can't give you a kid? Like, you obviously want a kid and I can't provide that for you. Like, so I had to work through all of those different layers, and therapy helped, journaling helped, being around my closest girlfriends definitely helped. So then I switched doctors because that doctor moved, and I met my current doctor, who I absolutely love, at the Markham Fertility Clinic. She's a woman that's gone through IVF herself, and to have her two boys, she's actually, I think, gone through like 5 or 6 IVFs to get her two boys. So she understands where you're coming from. She's not just spewing facts. You're not just a number, like, you're a person to her. And I felt instantly connected. Like, I was like, okay, let's do this. IVF number two, saved money. Because the other piece is, on the first one, we had financial aid from the government. They covered about $10,000. And I was lucky enough that my teacher benefits covered all the medication. Oh, now, yeah, so I was very lucky that way. But on the second one, which I'm about to approach, we were paying for it all. So we saved the money and we said, okay, round two. But this time I learned from the last experience and I thought, okay, you idiot, go see a naturopath. Go talk to, you know, a professional about this, because the clinic does a really good job with all the scientific things, but they don't necessarily go over, like, you know, in order to improve your egg quality, you're supposed to see a naturopath, like, or work on, like, vitamins and supplements for 3 months, and exercise and diet and all of these things that will really help improve the quality of your eggs and his sperm too. Like, 'cause even though his sperm is super great, he got some stuff too to just make it even better. So we both did that, and I was feeling like, okay, back in control, because I always feel safe when I'm in control. I don't feel safe when I'm not in control. And I'm like, okay, we got this. We're doing this, and we save money. And ladies, when I tell you I did absolutely everything I possibly could to make this work, I will tell you I did absolutely everything I could, such as I took 2 months off of work. I did the exercise. I took about 12 to 14 vitamins and supplements every single day. I did the dieting. We were currently living with my parents at the time of the second IVF because my new house hadn't been ready. So I was thinking to myself, okay, my mom's probably going to feed me better than I could possibly feed myself. So I'm thinking, like, I've got a great diet. I'm doing all these things. I'm not stressing, Jenny, like, you got this. And I go for IVF number two. Same thing with all the needles and injections to get your eggs where you need them to be. And this time we pulled out 20 eggs.
Wow.
Yeah.
Did you change your protocol at all? Like, did your medications change or your amounts or anything different?
Yes. And I definitely also, they discovered from the first one that my lining was a little bit thin. So they were giving me medication also to thicken that. And they did change a few of the injections. I forget the names of it right now, but I know that they did change the protocol. I think they learned from the first one as well. Mm. So this time around, we did all of that. I produced the 20 from the egg retrieval, which was fantastic. So grateful from that.
And did then you go in feeling like a chicken again?
Oh, 100%. like a friggin', yeah, huge chicken this time. Because clearly 20 eggs to come out of you is a lot. So I did that. And I remember like waking up, because they know they put you under, obviously, for the egg retrieval. And my husband just being like, they said 20 eggs, 20 eggs. Aww. Yeah. So that was nice. And then from the 20, 14 became mature. And then from the 14, we had 9 make it to actually the blastocyst stage. So those phone calls I was getting was a lot better, because it was like, oh, it's actually working and it made it to this stage, right? So I wasn't as devastated during that time. But I was also being reminded before genetic testing, you know, you are over 35. Mm-hmm. And you know the percentages of miscarriage for over 35. And again, I was like, okay, I get you're doing your job. And, you know, when I spoke to so-and-so on day one, she told me that. So I don't need to hear that on day 3 and day 5. Mm-hmm. Because I just feel like no woman says to herself, okay, I'm going to wait until my eggs, like, age, and then I'm going to try and make babies. Like, shit happens and life happens. Yeah. And you know what? What I just went through, 3 failed IUIs and a failed IVF, I needed time to heal. Mm-hmm. I needed time and space and reflection from that. So when you're on this journey, like, no one just jumps right in, and every one step feels like 10 steps. Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. So I have 9 now that made it to the 5 blastocyst stage, which means that we've got embryos, which can turn into babies. So again, another $5,000 out of our pocket came. And my parents at the time knew about this. And my dad was thinking, because I have a brother who has 2 children, and that's always been something I'm like, you know, cried over. I can't make you grandbabies. Like, you, I know you want to see my grandbabies. So my dad said, you know what? I've done a lot for Dave's kids, and I want to do something for these grandbabies. So I'm going to help pay for genetic testing. That, you know, which was very touching, because it's like, you're helping me bring in these babies into the world.
Yeah.
So I have my 5 and my 9. And from the 9, we actually tested 5. 3 came back abnormal due to my age. So that means they would have miscarried. 1 came back inconclusive. And 1 came back like super strong. Like, one of the embryologists and later on a doctor was like, if I had to give you a teacher grading for this embryo, it's an A+. So I was thinking, sweet, like... And I tell my husband, see, when I take control and I take it back and I do all these things, like, look what I accomplished. And so we thought, okay, we'll get rid of the 3. We're going to keep the inconclusive and the A+. And then we had 4 left over after that. Perfect. Freezing them. So months passed, and I made sure I was off work for both, like, the egg retrieval and then, of course, the transfer. And you have to remember, this was the first time after 4.5 years that I got to this transfer stage. I had never made it to that stage. So I was so grateful. And I remember like praying. And I remember my doctor wearing a t-shirt that day saying, like, you know, it's always impossible until it is done, I believe. And it was just like all these little things that morning that felt like, this is it. This is my moment. This is our moment after all the shit we've been through. So we transfer this strong embryo. Of course, we're starting with the A+. And I told some of my closest friends, because I was told I had a 90% viability rate. I was told it was that strong, like, this was going. And so we wait our 2 weeks, and I find out I'm pregnant, and I am elated, and I am feeling like I'm crying. I'm happy. I'm like, this is my moment. And I could, like, feel things happening in my body I had never felt before. And I was just feeling so grateful. And then as time went on, at the beginning, they have to test your HCG to make sure that it's doubling. Mm-hmm. So mine was never doubling. It was increasing, but it was never doubling. And then I started to experience spotting. And it's really fucking scary when you experience spotting, because that's like the number one sign of something being wrong.
Yeah.
And I'm being told by my nurses that like, but your HCG is rising and some women spot. And so now I'm doing like the whole thing in my head, like, okay, what does this mean? I'm watching TikToks. I'm watching YouTube. I'm trying to figure out, have other women had successful pregnancies while spotting? And inside I'm like freaking out. So she's like, okay, well, you know, it's Friday. You're going to have to come back on Monday. And on that Saturday, I start bleeding a lot. And now I'm freaking out. Now I am feeling like something is terribly wrong. And all I keep being told by like the after hours is like, no, some women go through this. Just wait, come back to the clinic. Like, it's going to be like, just try to relax. Try to relax. Like, you're bleeding. You're feeling something is wrong. The only thing you have power over is going to get a pregnancy test. But I did that. But like, what does that even prove? Mm-hmm. And my mom and I sat there and we did the rosary and we prayed, because that's all I felt like I could do. Go back to the clinic on Monday. HCG rises even more. So she's like, it's going to be fine. Bleeding turns back into spotting. Okay. You're going to come back 2 days from now. And I'm just like, in my head, it just feels like this back and forth between hope and anguish. What's happening? Like, why is my body doing this? But I'm being told your HCG is rising. So that tells you that everything's okay. So then you're holding on to hope again. Mm-hmm. 2 days pass, bleeding comes back, HCG still rising, ladies. This was like the messed up part about my journey, because I am like, what is happening? Mm-hmm. Finally, I had to wait 2 more days after that to see a doctor. And at the time, my doctor was delivering a baby. So they brought me in finally for an ultrasound. And I sat in that room, and usually the ultrasound, like, women, they'll talk to you and they'll, you know, kind of make small chat. This woman said nothing. So in my heart, I was thinking, okay, it's like something's terribly wrong. And so I go in and I speak to a doctor that's not my doctor. Mm. And the first thing he does to me is I sit down. He's like, Jennifer, I don't like what I see. I don't like what I see at all. That's how he starts the fucking conversation. And I said, okay. And my knees are shaking. My hands are shaking. I'm trying to hold it together. I'm trying to, like, give me something. He's like, I see a sac, but I don't see a heartbeat. And I understand the HCG is rising, but I really feel that this is an early miscarriage. Bawling, shaking. And I'm also by myself because it's COVID. My husband was not allowed to be with me for this ultrasound appointment. So that moment was like terrible. And then I remember just the only thing that could come to my mind was like, all right, give me a percentage. Like, what's my percentage? Like, what is my percentage of this working out? And he said to me, 1%. And it was just like, heart fell to the floor. I didn't want to hear any more. But still, he says to me, but we're going to do one more blood test just to make sure. And we're going to have you come back in 2 more days. Like, you don't even understand. Like, even talking about this right now is bringing me back to this just like traumatic moment of like, I just wanted answers so bad. And they just kept saying to me, 2 more days, do another blood work. We'll see what the HCG is. And it kept rising. That's the messed up part about my journey. It kept rising. Yeah. Because what was happening, I believe, was the sac around was like growing, but there was nothing growing inside. And that was the devastating part. So I remember doing one more blood work with this beautiful nurse, and she like prayed the Our Father with me as aww, I was getting blood taken. Like, it was such a beautiful moment, and I needed it. I could not stop crying. I was just completely devastated in that moment. And just, you know, in your stomach, when you're like, this is wrong, like there's something so wrong. And so we did that, came back 2 more days. And that's when I got to see my doctor, who did confirm it was a miscarriage. And for me, I just feel like in that moment, it was like, that was my moment of realization of, okay, you did absolutely everything you could. Everything you could. And this journey just proves over and over again, you have zero control, especially because I had the A+ embryo, mm-hmm, that was genetically tested.
Yep.
that was my most frustrating part. Like, I went home like so mad at like everything, God, what the fuck, why is this happening to me? Why would you bring me through this?
Mm-hmm.
And to have it just be such a heartbreak, because I say this to a lot of people. I know I miscarried at like 6.5 weeks, and I know women miscarry much later in pregnancy. And I know that's even harder, but it doesn't matter when you miscarry. When you see pregnancy on a stick or through blood work, your heart is in.
Mm-hmm. In. The moment that embryo goes inside you, that frozen embryo transfer, fresh if you do that, that's your baby. So even if you never end up, even with a positive, it's a loss.
Yeah.
From the moment we put those from the moment we create those embryos and we know that they're in existence, you know what I mean? They're ours. They're our babies. And so if they don't make it to blast, or if they don't make it through your transfer, those are losses for us.
Yeah.
Yeah. Where people, I know for sure, like, well, at least this, or, you know, at least you weren't that far along, or you never got the positive pregnancy test after your transfer. So
yeah, so it doesn't matter. But that's so not how it feels to a woman, because I agree with you. The second we're told the transfer, it's in you, all of that, I agree with you. That's our baby. Yeah. And so that just the pull, the back and forth for me on this journey was just, especially like that week of like, why do you keep telling me to come back? I don't understand why. Like, someone can't just give me a straight answer here. Like
leading you on. On playing with you, like giving you almost, it feels like false hope. Like, just tell me already so I can move on.
Yeah. Yes. Yeah. And even on the day where she confirmed the miscarriage, the HCG still rose. So like, even before talking to her, I had like a little oomph of like, okay, hope. And then it's like I buckled to my knees. I couldn't even walk to the car. I remember like getting to the bench and just sitting there and calling my husband, bawling my eyes out. Yeah. So that was a tough experience with that one. And then after that, they give you medication that you have to take within 48 hours to like, mm-hmm. have it be disposed from your body. And ladies, that in and of itself is such a terrible, terrible experience for any woman to go through, because you literally take these these drugs, and then in 48 hours it's completely out of you. And you get up the next day and you carry forward, as hard as it is and as traumatizing as it is.
You got to put on your armor and keep moving, right?
Right. And you know, they're like, okay, and you know, you still have this many embryos, and it's just like, I'm not there yet.
Yeah,
I'm still dealing with what I'm doing.
Yeah. Like, shut up.
How did the medications make you feel? Like, did you have any side effects from them when you took those ones?
I was fortunate enough that the medications weren't too bad with my body. However, as I got closer and closer to egg retrieval day, I was feeling very like snappy. I feel like I could bite my husband's head off any day of the week kind of thing. So I was very snappy that way. And of course, the progesterone shots that you have to take after the transfer, those hurt. Those really hurt. Like, that goes in your butt, and he has to like massage it to make sure the oil, like, you feel like bruises around your ass, and you're like trying to do your everyday activities, and it's really hard.
No. During that back and forth time too, like the, you know, 2 more days, you were still doing PIOs the whole time?
Yes.
Yeah. Did you ever have the breakdown of like, why am I doing this to myself? Like, why am I continuing to do this if it's not happening?
100%. And I also, yeah, like even just talking about it right now with the two of you, it's just like, you're so crazy what we go through. You know what I mean? In order to achieve this dream. And I also just, yeah, like so many nights I was just like I want to quit. Like, I don't want to do this anymore. Even though I knew I couldn't stop, like I had to keep doing what I was doing. Yeah.
I think that's a really low, I feel like it, well, for me, it was a really low point where you're in that in between limbo where you're mm-hmm. not sure kind of what's happening, because mm-hmm. like you're saying, there's all this element of science involved, but there's that, no matter how, like they can literally take one sperm and put it in an egg and make an embryo, but they cannot make that embryo grow. And yes. they cannot, no matter how much they charge you for embryo glue and whatever other bullshit voodoo thing they,
oh yeah,
they tell you, they cannot make that embryo stick and burrow in and create a baby. They cannot do that. It's
no.
magic. It's God. It's the universe. It's whatever higher power there is, you know, mm-hmm. in this world that is creating that life.
Mm-hmm. Yes.
You know, so we can only do what we can do. And then I think that sometimes that back and forth is because they're unsure. They yeah. don't know.
And I remember saying to her, like, I had a genetically tested, you told me this was A+. Like, what the hell happened? I wanted answers. And she, of course, said, you know, this is nature's way of saying, like, not meant to be. But she explained it this way scientifically. She goes, when we genetically test, it's like testing the heart of the body. I don't know what the brain's doing. I don't know what the lungs are doing. I don't know what yeah. other things are doing. But my thing is, interesting that you tell me that now, whereas when you're doing genetic testing, it's like, oh, you got to test right now. You got to spend the money right now. You can't do this later. And so you're thinking, oh my God, I have to do this. And I remember even my husband being pissed off even after egg retrieval day when we got all these eggs, because we had agreed to $5,000 to test 5. And the guy was like, oh, you got so many more. Let's do 10,000. And you're like, what? No. So I remember her saying that, and I'm like, okay, thank you for providing me with that answer. But at the end of the day, it goes back to exactly what you said. You really don't have control over this journey. And I want to say to every woman, I am the biggest control freak. I literally learned the lesson of you have to let go, because I couldn't have done anything more to try to make this happen.
Mm-hmm. Oh, we can totally relate to that, which I'm sure so many other people can as well.
Yeah.
Many of us that are going through infertility are type A personalities. And
I know. And it's frustrating because you're like, no, don't tell me that. I can do this. I can try that. I can da-da-da-da.
Yeah.
Every I dotted and every T I crossed.
Yeah. I feel like too, the fertility clinics, I don't know if maybe like there needs to be a change in their initial consultation, you know, framework or whatever,
yes.
or even just when you're going through each different treatment option or testing option, because for all of my consults, I've been to a few different clinics, and all of the consults, it's, you know, you present your story, right? Like, you know, it's been this many months and we've tried this and whatever the case may be. And yeah. then they just kind of go straight into options. And yes. sometimes if, you know, you've been so battered and bruised being on this, you know, trip that you don't absorb and hear sometimes what certain things that they're saying. And I understand that we do pick up what we want to hear too.
Of course. Yeah.
But they don't go into like, and we do think, and even people that don't know in the fertility world, we think that IVF is the answer.
Yes.
And that IVF will give you, IVF equals a baby.
Yes.
And that's not always the case.
No. And I didn't know any of that.
Yeah. And I think that they don't go into that. They don't say like, we don't need specific, you know, stats and things like that. But like, hey, this is an opportunity. This is a chance. These are not guaranteed. Here's your different options. Like, and even yes. just like sit on it, take some time. Cause I always felt as well, like you're under the gun.
Mm-hmm.
Like you're saying with the genetic testing, right? Like you agreed upon 5, this is what you did. And then all of a sudden it's like, well, hey, you want to add this in? And you're sitting there like, shit, I want to do exactly what you're telling me to do because I want a baby.
Yeah. Right. 100%.
So I'll do anything.
I'll do anything you say. But at the same time, that's why I really highly recommend like doing all the things that you just said. And it would be nice if those professionals in those fields could give us those different options. Cause you just think, okay, this is the end all be all. And if this doesn't work, I guess I got to try another IVF and then another IVF.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
But, and for me, you know, yes, I do have 5 other embryos, but after an experience like that and having the genetically tested strong one, right? Like I have untested embryos for all the other ones.
Mm-hmm.
So it just feels like if that didn't work, like, you know, mm-hmm. is this going to work? But I'm trying to keep hope in my heart as I, you know, approach the next transfers that are coming up.
Can I ask a question about your little M babies?
Yes.
They're frozen.
Yes.
They're hanging out in the fridge. Mm-hmm. Are they able to, if you wanted to, would they be able to defrost them, test them, and refreeze them?
So unfortunately, no. Mm. How, and I don't know if this, again, maybe there's, as time goes on, because I feel like with more technology, things evolve and change. But right now they say they can only test them before, like when they're fresh out of egg retrieval, because they don't want to harm the embryo. Apparently when you freeze it and then unfreeze it and then test it, it's like a whole process that you have potential to harm possibly the embryo.
Yeah. I think we also too take for granted that when we're defrosting an embryo or thawing the embryo, assume that it's going to survive.
Yes.
Right. Like you just think that my embryos are in the freezer and then when I'm ready for them, they're going to defrost and they're going to be as they were when they were, you know, retrieved.
Right.
But that's not always a guarantee either. Mm-hmm. So it makes total sense. If you're going through that process, it could be causing trauma to the embryos and
Exactly. And again, I was fortunate enough that for even both IVFs, like when it de-thawed, it was okay. But other women, you don't get even to that stage. And that's another heartbreak, right?
Absolutely. Absolutely. I think too, after your first IVF, for those who have been through more than one, you're kind of naive and go along with what the clinic is saying or the doctor, and you put a lot of faith in the doctor.
Yes.
And then by the second one, when you've had a little bit of hardships and you feel a little bit more angry and jaded, you kind of find your voice and is like, no, wait a second. This is sort of, this needs to be done differently, or you start to, you know, find your voice.
Oh, for sure. And like ask more questions and, you know, gather more research. But, you know, it's funny that even though, like, when you know better, you do better kind of thing. I still told my closest friends, I've only had one IVF, because the shame you carry as a woman with shit. Guys, I did the one thing that was supposed to work, the end all be all, and it didn't work.
Yeah.
So that's one thing that when they read my book, I reveal to a lot of people that don't know this, that it was my, you know, second one.
Yeah.
Because I don't know why, but I just felt like I'm a type of personality. Like when you want something, you just have to work hard. That's all you have to do. You just have to work hard and keep at it, and it's going to happen. And this is the one thing I have fucking done everything I possibly can, and I can't seem to break through.
Amen, sister. Amen. I'm right there fucking with you.
Yeah.
And you're just like banging your head against the wall. Like, I've achieved so many other things by working hard. So that is why I think I tell people, oh yeah, I just want IVF. And sometimes I even catch myself in my own lie. Like, I don't even believe I'm on my second one. Do you know what I mean? Like, it's so messed up. And I think it's just because of shame. Like, I should be able to do this. Why can't I do this? Why, I'm a woman. I, you know?
Yeah.
All of that.
Why is my body not doing what it's meant to be doing?
Yes. Mm-hmm. Totally.
Absolutely. No, I can totally relate to that.
Yeah.
100%. And the shame too. I don't know why we have, like, why infertility in general is such a, dare I say, like taboo kind of, right? People don't want to talk about it or women feel shameful to tell their story.
And so I was just gonna say that when you go to a clinic and you see hundreds and hundreds of women walking through those doors, you're like, nobody talks about it, but yet there's like hundreds and thousands of us.
Yep. Like cattle.
Yeah.
Yes. Cattle in the living room.
Yeah, oh my God. Totally. With all of our hens, like our eggs and ovaries.
Yeah. All with bloated bellies. Yes. Don't necessarily have babies in them yet.
Exactly.
Yeah. And it's funny too. Did you find that, like, coming forward with your story or being a little bit more open? Actually, I should ask first, were you more like private about your story aside from the IVF, like having issues and, you know, seeking help and stuff from a clinic? Were you open about your journey or did you kind of keep it private?
I was open about going to the clinic. I wasn't necessarily open about all the nitty gritty details. So I think even when my best friends and my family and my cousins and even like my really close teacher friends read my chapter, I think you're going to be like, wow, like I had no idea what you've gone through.
Yeah.
Because I didn't really share that. And part of it was because of the shame. I really felt like a failure.
Oh, 100%. I can't relate to you any more than I am relating to you right now.
Yes.
Right? 7.5 years, multiple IVFs, multiple IUIs, 9 transfers. Wow. Absolutely. Absolutely. Totally relate to the shame and just, yeah, you feel like a failure and your body's not doing what it's meant to do. And you feel that you're alone in it and that you're the only one that's experiencing it.
Because yes.
It felt like to me, everyone around me was not having an issue, or even if they had an issue, they only had just a little issue, or it was a short amount of time. And, you know, oh, I just did one round of Clomid, let's say, for example, with timed intercourse, and bam, it worked. And you're like, fuck, thanks. That was how many years ago I tried that?
Yeah, that's the best. And that's pop up, you know, in your lowest moments. That's when you're like, oh, great, another Instagram post. Okay, great. Yeah. Like so-and-so. Yeah. Oh, 6 months later, you weren't even trying. Fantastic.
Yeah. I had one coworker. She was very open about her struggles.
Yeah.
Had no idea, obviously, what I have ever went through, because I at work never have mentioned anything to anyone. And she was telling me about her, where she was kind of in her journey. And she was, I think, just advancing into her first IUI. And I remember, like, you know, being supportive for her while we were talking and that sort of thing. And I said to her, if you ever need to talk, I'm here. And then afterwards, I remember thinking, like, oh, you're so naive. Yeah. Because she was so positive when she was talking to me.
Oh, for
like,
sure.
You know, this is good. You know, I think this is going to work, and they've got me on this med and, you know, regulating all these things. And she was talking about her diagnosis and stuff. And I was like, I feel so happy for you that you don't know
what's to come.
What could lie ahead for you. Yes. And I really hope
that some people get the miraculous first IUI, but
I hope that they never see that the rest of that path. And that it's easy, but I was just like, I feel so happy that you're in this little bubble.
I know. I was part of that bubble. I really was. I was like, all right, IUI, it's going to happen like that. Oh, okay.
Oh, I think we all were at one point. You know, for sure.
Your first attempts at it, you're like, oh yeah, I got this.
Yeah. Yeah. I even remember the first time that you like try.
Yeah.
First month that you try, when you pull the goalie, as they say.
Yes. Yeah.
And afterwards, you're like, oh my gosh. You know what I mean? Like, you're so excited. Like, what the fuck did we just do?
Yeah.
And you look back and it's like, oh shit.
I know. Like, months go turn into 5 years. Like, wow. Okay.
Yeah. So, you know, we know that this journey is definitely not an easy one. And first time, it really puts a strain on relationships. Mm-hmm. How has this journey affected your relationship with your husband?
So I would say, because again, we have unexplained infertility prior to like even me knowing about his super sperm. And I hearing that diagnosis, it's like, as you're going through it, sometimes like you don't mean to, but you have a fight and it's about something else that's not related, something so stupid, but really it's about what we're going through with the fertility journey. And, you know, is that whole thing about like, well, I'm not blaming you. Well, I'm not blaming you, but really kind of deep down, one of us is blaming the other. You know what I mean? And because we really didn't know that answer, it made it sometimes even more frustrating. So I would say like, overall, my relationship with my husband, I will say it has brought us stronger together, because we really had to go through some real shit through this process. Mm-hmm. And the fact that we are still together and united is unbelievable to me. I had many nights where I was depressed. I hated my body. I'd come home bawling my eyes out. I didn't want to talk to him. So I'd say for him and I, yes, have we had those low, low moments? 100%. But we've had more highs than lows, and we've really stuck it through. And one of the best things my husband ever said to me, and I think he genuinely means it, is, Jenny, when I married you, I chose you. So if it's baby in you, bonus. But if it's not, I still choose you.
Mm-mm.
And it's like,
there you go. You got M going there.
You know what else got me? What your dad said, but that one too, Jenny.
Yeah. So I'm very blessed to have the man that I have in my life, because I don't think another man would be so patient and so understanding. And he's really put into his head that like, if he doesn't become a father, it's going to be okay. I'm still happy with you. And he's never made me feel less of a woman through this process. Now, me as a woman, have I blamed him or, oh my God, you drank another beer. What's wrong with you? Do you know what that does to, like, you know, like all this craziness? I've done more of that onto him, but he has never done it onto me. And sometimes I'm like, hate me. Like, in my lowest lows, like, do you want a divorce? Like, if I can't do this for you, are you sure you're not going to regret this down the road? Like, I've had those moments and he's been like, no, I'm not going anywhere. Like,
yeah,
so blessed to have him. Truly, truly, truly. Mm. And even just thinking about that line, like, still, like, oh.
You're so lucky.
Very fortunate. Glenn is a wonderful, wonderful man.
And to have, like, a lot, sometimes, like, these infertility battles are, like, even for you, Em, right? Sometimes you're faced with these really, really terrible hardships and experiences early on in your marriage where, you know, it's not like you guys, you know, we've been together for 40 years and all of a sudden this happens and you really know the person, but it's like, you know, you get married, you're in like the honeymoon phase and things are great, or you're traveling and experiencing life and living life as a couple for a few years. And then all of a sudden you try for a family and then it's not working out. So it's not like you've had all this time together, you know?
Right.
So it's very easy to grow apart throughout that trauma.
Oh, for sure. And also, like, your intimacy changes because it's all about trying to make a baby and that affects your relationship, right? Like,
100%.
So
it brings out like a whole other slew of insecurities.
Of course. Totally. Yeah. So like I said, 100%, we've had our moments, but thank God we've made it through and we are like more of a team, you know, that's how I feel.
Yeah.
Yeah. And you guys shared, you know, the hardest and the lowest together, which is something that I feel no one will ever understand that level and that deepness that you two have. And that's so special because you go through that, you can go through pretty much anything else. And if there's, you know, knock on wood, if there, you know, you don't hope for that, but like, you know, we did that, we can do this, we can do this. Like, it's just, yeah, it's something that you guys share that's very, very deep.
And I agree with what you said, that like, if you can make it through an infertility journey with your husband, you can really, truly make it through anything in a marriage.
Hell yeah. Yeah. Everything else is just aces. We can definitely do that.
Yeah. And I don't know if you felt this way, but like sometimes when my husband saw me so sad and saw me so miserable, like he'd get mad, like at the fact that he's like, oh, I just want to take it away from you and I can't change the thoughts in your head. You know what I mean?
Yeah. My husband's line all the time was, I hate feeling so helpless.
Yeah.
I am helpless. Like, he's like, I would take it from you. I would, like, with my health issues and things like that, he's like, I would take it from you in a heartbeat. He's like, I'm helpless in the situation.
Yeah.
Yeah.
That's really
beautiful. Truly shitty situation.
Yeah.
So do you have like a kind of plan as to if you want to share kind of your plan as to where things are going next or what your next steps are?
Yeah, from us. So again, you take the time to heal from that last experience. And next steps are definitely to prepare my body for another transfer. And I'm truly actually, because I am 37 years old, I'm considering transferring two at the same time. Just to roll the dice. And like I said, I do have five other embryos I still need to go through. And I feel like after the experience of having the A+ embryo that didn't work, you really feel like I'm in a place where like I have nothing to lose. Like, you know what I mean? Like, even though these are untested, like I learned from that experience that, okay, at the end of the day, it's still a 50-50 roll of the dice. It doesn't matter now if it's the genetically A+ embryo because I had that and it didn't work. So now I'm kind of approaching it very differently. Like, okay, like I'm not going to, like my husband always says this, don't get too high and don't get too low, right? Just stay somewhere in the middle, Jenny. So that's what I'm trying to do as I prepare myself for the next transfer, which hopefully will be coming up soon. As a teacher, I like to pick times that are like a little bit less stressful, like the summers or the Christmas holidays.
Absolutely. Yeah.
So yeah. And just, you know, trying to exercise and eat right and continue on the natural path, like acupuncture, all of that, because you got nothing to lose to give it your best shot. So, and I'm still, like I said, I have had my low moments. I have said, fuck this. I don't want to do it. Maybe, you know, all of that. But after writing the book that we wrote, I have more hope in my heart.
Yeah.
To keep going.
I think it helps to go in like in a neutral.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? To kind of stay neutral. I think that definitely helps.
Yeah.
And, you know, you can rest your head at night knowing that you've tried everything you possibly mm-hmm. could.
That's another piece.
Is all we can all say, right? As if we literally gave it our all in order to create a family.
Yeah. I 100% agree with you there.
Yeah.
So yeah, fingers crossed. Coming
absolutely.
Up.
Yes. You will be in our thoughts and prayers for sure. For sure. And you'll have to keep us posted as well.
Oh, of course. There's twins. Like, is that something that could happen?
Absolutely. Yeah. Is there something in particular that you really feel that you would like to say to someone who is going through a similar situation, like a piece of advice or just a tidbit for them?
Yeah, for sure. I have a couple things I would like to say. That's okay. Okay, so I would say to any woman who's listening, who's on this journey, who's like literally sitting in that dark hole that I think all three of us have experienced, I want to tell you that you're not alone, that it's okay not to be okay when it comes to this journey. Like, give yourself that space to not be okay and work through all of that. I have written a book with three other authors, and I truly hope that our words through that and opening our hearts and our experiences will help women who are struggling on the same path. And for me personally, I feel like I want to say to women, like, I get it. I am still not pregnant yet. I'm still on this journey. I feel like I'm in the trenches with all of you. And I was the crazy control freak that took like 2 months off work, did the diet thing, did exercise, did it all to make this happen. And this journey taught me that it is completely out of your control. I have learned to let go of trying to control the outcome. And writing my chapter was probably the most therapeutic for me because it allowed me to get to a place of peace. I have finally gotten to a place of true healing. And I hope that the readers and anyone listening right now find their own peace through our words, through this wonderful podcast. And I think my last thing is my chapter is called Stay in the Arena. So I just want to say, like, if you're brave enough to show up and to enter the arena of infertility, the only certainty you have is that you're going to get your ass kicked. You're going to get knocked down. You're going to get, you know, knocked out, and you're going to want to quit. But my final advice would be stay in the arena, even though it's been years. Stay in the arena, even though you've experienced loss and your heart has broken into a million pieces. Stay in the arena, even though you are scared and you want to give up, and you've experienced one miscarriage or multiple miscarriages. My final advice would be forget all the reasons why it won't work out and believe the one reason why it will.
Oh my God. I love it. I know you guys can't see us right now, but we are all crying. Jenny. Yeah, that sums it up pretty much very well. I've cried so many times. There's so many moments that were just like, you know, really hit home. What your husband said to you, what your dad decided to do for you with the testing and the arena quote and the advice. Like, thank you.
Thank you. Sorry. If this story or our stories can help a woman even just a little bit, or to try again or to have hope, that's what we're all trying to do. And that's something that I feel so passionate about. So thank you so much for this wonderful opportunity.
It was a pleasure to have you chat with us today and tell us your story. You truly are a fighter. And I think that I do strongly believe that everything happens for a reason. I think I actually said this just in Leah's episode as well. Even though we might not agree with the reason, we might never know the reason, but things truly do happen for a reason. And maybe this is happening to you because it's supposed to lead you down this path of helping others, because I truly believe that you are, you know, meant to do great things and help other women, because I feel that your story is just so inspirational to others. So, you know, it sucks that we have to go through what it is that we have to go through. And it's
yes, 100%.
You know, once you're on the other side and you can gain perspective and say, yeah, that really sucked, but here I have my end goal. And, you know, for us, like you said, we're still in the trenches of it. And, you know, we're still moving towards that light to get to that rainbow.
Yes.
But I think that you are going to do fan-fucking-tastic things. And you're going to help so many women. Absolutely.
Like, even now, just like when you're telling your story and going through what you've been through, and you're still like so positive. It's, it's so, I don't know. It gives us hope. It really does. And like, you just, some of the words are, that you said are very powerful. Like, it, you know, you're pushing forward, and it's just almost like an inspiration, like for others to like, yeah, Jenny went through all that. Like, we can do it too.
Yeah. I'm still going. Cause I truly believe that, right? Like,
I'm
going to take this pain and we're going to keep going. We're going to keep trucking. We're going to find the light again through all this shit.
Mm-hmm. Absolutely. Well, thank you so much. You know, through your story, we can feel your strength. And like I said, you're so inspiring and going to do wonderful things in this world, especially within the fertility and infertility community. I can, you know, already foresee things in the future that your world is just going to boom open with all of these different opportunities. And, you know, you get knocked down and you get back up again, right? And you keep fighting the, you know, keep fighting the fight. Our thoughts and prayers will be with you. And we are so excited to continue on with you and your journey. And we wish you all of the very best, all of the absolute very best.
Thank you so much.
Thank you again, Jenny, for being on with us. Remember, everyone, in any project, including the baby project, you must take things one step at a time.
Got a question for us? Or perhaps you would like to share your story and be a guest on our podcast? Feel free to connect with us by emailing us at thebabyproject_@outlook.com or DM us on Instagram @thebabyproject_. Thanks for listening.